This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Hello there. How you doing? It's Kevin Riley here, and welcome to Irish Time here on the Manawatu People's Radio in Palmerston North on yet another, I keep saying this, but you know, been blessed. We're having an Indian summer. It's a beautiful sort of morning. You know, the sun is blazing away, etc. And it's only around about 19 or 20. You know, it's not scorching hot, but it becomes unbearable. But anyway, it's supposed to change over the next day or two anyway, to, you know, heavy rain and storms, really strong winds. But if it happens, it's not as bad as they're predicting. Anyway, get on to this stuff here, Kevin. Incredibly blessed. This is 86-year-old dancer. Yes, this woman is 86 years of age. It's unbelievable. And I read it, I thought, got to tell people about this woman, you know. Dancer Joanne Banks first stepped on the stage in Northern Ireland in 1958 as a teenager with the Royal Ballet. Now 86 years old, she is back on the boards again. I've had quite a long career, which is unusual for a dancer, that's for sure. Adding that she is incredibly blessed and that she's still performing. For Northern Ireland dancer Clara Kerr, who is performing alongside her, the older dancer is so inspiring. The two are cast in a dance company, Trojans, by an acclaimed Irish choreographer, Philip Corrigan, I think it is. The contemporary dance show is performed at the Island Arts Centre. They're in Lisburn. That's interesting. I've got a sister in Lisburn. Banks told BBC Northern Ireland that she would still vividly remember her first visit to Belfast to perform. I've had quite a long career, which is unusual for a dancer. That's for real. The first time I visited Belfast was unbelievable in 1958 with the touring company of the Royal Ballet for 2 weeks in the Grand Opera House. Yep, right there in Victoria Street. Kerr from Hollywood, that's just outside Belfast. That's where Rory McIlroy is also from, Hollywood. He used to play golf there. Is by contrast in her 20s and is performing alongside Joanna in Trojans. Kerr, that's her younger partner. It's so inspiring. Joanne's incredible. She's an incredibly professional, and she keeps us in touch and keeps our feet on the ground. We found it such a lovely experience to collaborate with her. We had lovely chats in the dressing room all about her tours that she's been done, and they have been many, and she's danced with many famous ballet dancers. Lula is an all-Ireland professional dance company, and Trojans is an up-to-date retelling of the Aeneid, I think it is, complete with electronic music and the striking visuals. Philip believes that history repeats itself in all those old myths and tales. I mean, humanity keeps making mistakes and keeps rolling along. It's very relevant today. It's actually about war, migration and displacement. It is about the world today. That sounds very grim, but in actual fact, it's quite an uplifting piece. Lula has brought the performance to Lisbon after shows in Dublin and over there in Galway on the West Coast. For Kerr, who began her Irish dancing career when she was only three, has been on a long journey to become a professional dancer. When I was about 17, I realised I wanted to dance full time, and that's when I started to delve into contemporary ballet and other styles of dance. After she left school in Belfast, she trained and studied for 4 years at the Liverpool Institute of Performing Arts before graduating in 2019. If you really want to do it, I always encourage people to go for it. If you really love and you're very passionate about it, I always say give it a go. In Northern Ireland, the dance community is small but very mighty. But it is hard work. Obviously, we work very hard, and physically it's very intense. But we're very lucky we're able to dance every day. That's kind of a dream. And it's a dream for Joanne Banks. I've been living for almost 70 years. So what is the secret of dancing professionally at 86? Just an obsession, love of being on the stage and performing. If I'm invited to do something, however new and different, my philosophy says is give it a go. Yeah, good on her. 86. Unbelievable. Kerr from Hollywood by Krantas in her 20s is performing alongside her in this production of Trojans. She's been crying. She brings so much. You know, she, like I said, she just, Kerr just thinks she's so professional and brings a lot of, you know, good vibes and also, you know, experience and knowledge, particularly the knowledge from, you know, years and years of being a ballet dancer. Unbelievable, isn't it? 86. Anyway, now for something, I suppose, completely different. It is. This is I learned how to steer. This is President Connolly's sister. That's the President of the Republic of Ireland, Connolly. Or say Catherine Connolly. This is her sister who has been on a boat on the way over to Gaza. I think I read in the, was on the news earlier, they'd been turned back and a lot of them were sort of picked up and sent back, back to Greece or something. They were deported, but they're talking about going back again. You know, this is all to do with the war in Gaza, you know, and they're against the genocide that's taking place there and also to stop the Israeli people from killing more Palestinians for no particular reason. Just they want to get rid of them. They don't like Arabs, so they're going to kill them. A Sligo-based doctor and a sister of the president have set sail, like I said, that was last week. The mission brings together more than 80 vessels and 1,000 participants from over 100 countries, making it the largest civilian maritime initiative to attempt to reach Gaza to date. Dr. Margaret Connolly is accompanied on her boat by three other Irish activists and others from Scotland, Norway and Los Angeles. She estimates that there are about 21 Irish people on the flotilla as a whole. She speaks to the Sligo Weekender newspaper from the boat on Monday to just to keep them up with a play. Between periods of bad signal, Connolly described her current situation. I've been in Sicily for 2 weeks learning and settling in about the project. It was a little delayed because we were waiting on other boats to join us from Barcelona. But to be honest, it would take time to just to leaving home and doing something I've never done before. She says that she's not she's not a sailor and didn't pay enough attention whenever she was at sea with her family and when she was a child. The crew have been very patient to me. I learned how to steer the boat and tie knots today. Connolly is vehement in her condemnation of the Israeli state. And she says she's embarking on this mission to stand up against the wrongdoings. Good on her. They have no right to be bombing, droning and attacking ships on a peaceful humanitarian project to take much needed aid to Gaza. That's what these flotillas are doing. They're taking food and you know, clothing and tents and stuff like that for the people that have survived. Connolly is empathetic as a person and indeed a doctor in this case, so she's also using her medical skills to help people. Good on her. The thoughts of doctors letting their babies die in incubators, coming in with amputations that have to be operated on without anaesthetic, cesarean sections are done with no anaesthetic. I can't get words to describe how you can bomb children and people calling for help. Yep, it's no problem if you're an Israeli. She said that it is inevitable that the Israeli Defence Force will interpret their flotilla and come aboard their boat, saying that they have been training and that they are terrorists, they're helping terrorists. Whenever this happens, they will throw their materials overboard and raise their hand to indicate that they are peaceful protesters. It's just unbelievable, really, isn't it? Asked if she was nervous for this to happen. We on the fella are not even comparing the danger we are in to what they do to the prisoners in Gaza. Good on her. She's wised up to that fact. The Global Summit, Flotilla, which is travelling with hopes to get about 150 miles from the red line of Gaza. Connolly expects that the Israeli Defence Force will arrest him and bring him in, put him in prison. They may require a signature for a form which says that she has attempted to enter Israel illegally. But she says she will not send anything from the rogue state of Israel. They can deport me, but I won't sign any form. I know people, Irish people, whine and whinge a lot, but the humility and resilience of the Palestinian people should be looked at as if we are. It makes us think, why are we complaining? Connolly described how she had been protesting for years in Sligo for Palestinian freedom alongside her husband, Councillor Declan Bree. Also referring to people before Prophet Councillor Gina O'Doyle and Sinn Féin Councillor Arthur Gibbons. goes back to your home and where you're from and a sense of what's right and wrong. That's true. It's all about right and wrong. It's just barbaric. I just can't take it. I don't need to look at any pictures or any videos. I would be choking. I just have to think about it. The idea of hurting someone is just awful. She said they're growing up in a family of 14. Wow. I mean, she is keenly aware of a class system that some had it better than others. That's what class is all about, divide and conquer. I want my daughters to stand proud. I want them to be unafraid to say, this is wrong, this is totally insanity. Connolly said that one of her daughters, who is trained to be a doctor as well, will probably come with her next time that she embarks on such a mission. Isn't that kind of brilliant? Poet Sarah Classy, who was on the Fortella, was one of those who told Connolly about how she applied to be a member of the boat. American peace activist Anne Wright also met Connolly before she set sail, as she wanted to praise Irish members for their sympathy for the Palestinian people. Wright was also a colonel in the United States Army for 29 years. Wow. But she's well known today as she resigned from the State Department in 23 in protest at the American invasion of Iraq, citing violations of international law and curtailment of civil rights. She's now 80 as well. And they're just amazing, these people. There's photographs of them, and they don't look anywhere like that. They look kind of fit and healthy and sort of active. Connolly also filmed her SOS video, which will be released when they know that the Israeli boats are coming. We will know how we will throw all our phones overboard and get rid of everything. All our money has already been spent or sent home because they will take everything. It's not about them apprehending us. I'm 67 years old now. I am just sickened at the empty words of the government not doing enough. I know they're constricted, but we need action. And I agree with that totally. It's all words in the world we live in. All announcements, as we say, just announcements, but no action. The crew have been very patient with me. I learned how to steer the boat, etc., etc., so the other person said. So that's good luck to them. But like I said, they've been, the Israelis sort of got them, and I think they were imprisoned, in jail for a few days, and then they were sent, I think, possibly Cyprus or Crete or somewhere in the Mediterranean anyway. And, they were banned for life, as it were. The usual sort of Israeli stunt. It's insanity. Good on them. I think it's good that people do that, the world know that not everybody's happy with what the Israeli people are doing, the Israeli government. Anyway, this is something I mentioned last week or maybe the week before, but a taxi driver refused to take his dog, these people who were blind. He wouldn't let them into his vehicle with their guide dog, etc. God knows why, but he just wouldn't. It's got all the stuff on it. It is a genuine guide dog. It tells you that. It's got a strap around it, et cetera, et cetera, to indicate that it's a trained guide dog, and these people need it to get from A to B. The court heard the taxi driver had claimed he was allergic to dogs. Yeah, we've all heard that before. Well, a taxi driver has been ordered to pay compensation of €12,000. That's about $25,000 in our money to a blind couple after he refused to give him a lift at the taxi rank in Houston Station in Dublin because they had a guide dog. The Workplace Relations Commission ruled that the taxi driver, Adira Dongo, had probably a migrant himself, has discriminated against Lisa O'Donovan and her partner, Anthony Clark, on grounds of disability, in breach of the Equal Status Act of 2000, the couple who were visually impaired told the court that they proceeded to the taxi rank in Houston Station after arriving on a train from Cork. Both O'Donovan and Clark gave evidence that the driver reacted abruptly and stated that he would not take the guide dog. They both claimed that the taxi driver had shouted at them in a most aggressive manner and used abusive manners and started to winding up at the window and telling them where to go. So it wasn't a nice man, whoever he was. He's obviously having a bad day, and he had decided to take it out on this blind couple with their dog. O'Donovan Clark told the court that they were hugely embarrassed, and humiliated by the experience, which you would be, because you haven't done anything. and you've got some kind of sort of straight, total stranger, you know, effing and blinding and shouting at you and abusing you, et cetera, et cetera. It's not on, you know, it's not civil. Merrick said O'Donovan as was a person who is visually impaired and who has also a hearing impairment, as well as Clark. They're entitled to be provided with reasonable accommodation when, you know, trying to assist in services. She noted that their guide dog was clearly identified on the date because of its working guide dog uniform. Like I said, it was definitely a guide dog. You could tell what had the, you know, collar on it, et cetera, et cetera, and the identification that it was a guide dog. Both the couple's uncontested evidence ruled that they had been discriminated against by the refusal to provide them with a taxi service, which had caused them unnecessary upset and humiliation. He ordered them to pay the driver to pay €6,000 in compensation each to O'Donovan and Clark. She also ordered the taxi driver to ensure that he is compliant with the relevant egalitarian equality legislation in future. Dinger did not attend a court at all that day. The 58-year-old taxi driver and father of five from Dublin was earlier this year fined €1,000 by the Dublin District Court in order to pay legal costs over the same incident. So he's got a bit of a habit of doing stuff like this. He was prosecuted by the National Transport Authority under the Taxi Regulation Act over his refusal to take the couple and their guide dog on this occasion let them into his taxi. The court heard he could have just said no, you know, but he said, no, I'm busy, or I've got another call. But he just was abusive and shouted at them, and, you know, he was not a pleasant man to deal with. Judge Omni Hulkin said the attitude of another taxi driver prosecuted for the same offence towards two vulnerable people was disappointing and wholly unacceptable. And it is. I mean, how can you do that? You know what I mean? Obviously, you've got something wrong with themselves, you know, when they feel like they can just get away with murder, as it were. And it is. And then what have we got here? We've got... This is something I'm taking interest in. It goes on and on and on. I'll be interested to see if there is an outcome for this. This is Jeffrey Donaldson and his wife, who, you know, he's facing charges relating to aiding and abetting when he was supposed to, you know, sexually abuse a woman or women and accused of rape. The judge has said he would be extremely disappointed if the trial of Sir Jeffrey and his wife, Lady Eleanor Donaldson, does not go ahead in 3 weeks' time. The couple deny a combined total of 23 charges relating to alleged historical sex abuse. George Paul Ramsay has said another pre-trial report, review rather, hearing for the 19th of May, when the final reports on Mrs. Donaldson's health will be considered. The trial of the former DUP leader and his wife is due to be held in the Newry Crown Court on the 26th of this month. Judge Ramsay told a hearing that he was very firm on wanting the trial to go ahead as scheduled, and that remained his expectation. Let's hope so, because this has been off and on. And I think it's just because of who he was, you know, the leader of the parliamentarian and the leader of the Northern Ireland Executive at the time, that he's getting away with it, basically. I mean, procrastination goes on and on and on, but nothing actually happens. He accepted the public might be concerned, no, they are indeed, by any delay, but added there was genuine medical evidence to be considered. And it doesn't tell you what the medical evidence is. Said it was in the interest of all parties that the trial should commence. Mrs. Donaldson's lawyer said that her medical picture is clearly less than clear, and it would be foolish to speculate. She's got some, you know, mental health issues by the sound of it, you know, but she was quite happy to go along with her husband when he was, you know, abusing all these, sexual crimes against women, and one of raping a woman. You know, she was part of it, apparently, you know. Elliot quite happily took part. So we'll see how it all pans out. But I'm just feeling that it will just drag on and on and on. And eventually they will just give up in the end. All right, talking about here, a United Ireland. This is it's from the BBC, actually, in Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland is not a burden, it's a country with fresh opportunities, according to this reporter. If we really wanted to punish the British for 800 years of occupation and repression, make them keep the North forever, joked one Fianna Gael politician, John Dearsey, in a recent episode of Path to Power podcast. a remark that prompted fellow guest journalist Brenda Parr to laugh along really loudly. Brenda insisted that there was this prevailing view of many in the Republic who think merging with Northern Ireland was more trouble than it's worth. Parr and Dizzy both referred to and give credence to a 2024 contested report by John Fitzgerald that suggested unification could cost up to $20 billion a year for 20 years. But they come off of these figures, but they don't go into any detail. When the reports were challenged by host Matt Cooper, Dizzy claimed that it was only contested by Sinn Féin. If they're roughly correct, that's a lot of money. People aren't prepared to do that. In reality, the report has been challenged by a wide range of economic experts and commentators, just saying that this is way off the mark, way off the mark. Whatever your view, the 2024 piece of legislation and research landed right smack in the middle of what is a long-running, often highly polarised debate around a united Ireland. In all those debates, commentators will assess from different angles, sometimes clinging to a single piece of research because it validates their personal perception and their views. These sorts of reductive narratives, regarding Northern Ireland, often echo the ones that portray people in the North as less Irish, even though we hold the same passport and the same birthright. Indeed, we do. The platforming and proliferation of offensive caricatures of Northern Ireland as people as some kind of burden to be challenged, not only as partitionist in nature, but ultimately false. Northern Ireland is a global leader across several sectors, and unification of this island would combine two highly educated and skilled workforces that would strengthen Ireland's global economic and sectional leadership. Over 40% of the world's tracked mobile crushing and screening equipment is manufactured in Northern Ireland. There you go. The world's only fully composite aircraft wing, the Airbus A22 wing, was designed, manufactured and assembled in Belfast, with Northern Ireland contributing £1.8 billion to the UK aerospace sector. Northern Ireland's heavy engineering and aerospace and precision engineering sectors export billions of pounds worth of goods globally, rather than a drain. The Northern Ireland economy adds value to the economy. Belfast is now a global player in the fine technical and strategy among mid-sized European cities, and has also been listed as one of the top three fintech locations for the future, outranked only by London and Singapore. They're obviously doing something right. By combining the Republic of Ireland's large base of international banking with Northern Ireland's specialised tech talent. A united Ireland would have the potential to become a global player in that space. The Centre for Secure Information Technology at Queen's University there in Belfast is at the UK's Innovation and Knowledge Centre for Cyber Security. Along with his 60% of Northern Ireland's manufacturing companies are selling into the green economy now, which is generating £1.5 billion worth of, to the economy. So it's obviously, when you hear this sort of stuff, you realise just how big and how important the Northern Ireland economy is when all you think about is the past, really, and the troubles, et cetera, et cetera. Our food and drink industry is worth over £8 billion and is Northern Ireland's largest manufacturing centre. From Irwin's bread to Boatyard gin, food and drink from Northern Ireland is sold in over 70 countries. And we arguably have the best fly-up across these islands, Belfast Fly. But we forget the tourism boost for the Giant's Causeway to Fermanagh's Lakelands. Like the Republic of Ireland, our greatest export is our people, from Liam Neeson, Rory McIlroy, C.S. Lewis, Seamus Heaney. People from Northern Ireland are global leaders in the fashion industry. Jonathan Anderson founded the luxury brand J.W. Anderson. Born in Macrofelt, he is now the creative director of Dion. From Tyrone, Sarah Fryer is the current chief financial officer of OpenAI. Oh, I've heard of them. Simon Pitts is the CEO at Global and business leader. Neville was the chairman of CEO at Coca-Cola. So these people are obviously top of the league, it would seem. AP McIlroy is known as the greatest steeplechase jockey of all time. Riles McClenachan from Newtownards is the first gymnast to win an Olympic medal for Ireland. We are the home of Derry Girls, Kneecap, County Down narrative. It just goes on and on and on of what, you know, all the good things that are happening in sort of Belfast and right, well, the north of Ireland, that these people in the south would seem have an issue with, etc., etc. Anyway, that's about it for me this week. So I will be in touch with you next week and enjoy this weather while it's lasting, okay? Because I just think it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And like I said, an Indian summer we're enduring, which is great. I'd like to endure some more of it. Anyway, see you later. Have a good weekend and take care of one another. All right? Be kind. Bye.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.